across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, I'm recording this on a very peculiar morning for the world. It's a morning of cold, grey, heavy rain in London, and it just so happens that 40 minutes ago, Donald J. Trump made a speech that confirmed that he was to be the next president of the United States, beating Hillary Clinton after, on this side of the Atlantic, what was a roller coaster night. And I have to say, I was awake for most of it. Now, you know, I don't share any political views here, and I don't think what I would have to say would be of any use or interest anyway. But I think I can say this. What we've seen overnight is again the expression of a popular sentiment. And that is the expression that we had here with Brexit. It is people who are perhaps tired of globalization, tired of being pushed around, tired of machine politicians speaking. Now, whether they made the right decision or whether they made the wrong decision is not for me. And in many ways, history books of the future will only be able to tell that story. We can't right now. But it is interesting that through the internet, social media, popular culture, various ways, people have decided to circumvent the mainstream media to create a whole narrative around all of this. I don't want to sound like some kind of political commentator, because I'm not. I'm just a journalist who does radio shows. But it is an interesting, fascinating phenomenon that we are watching. And I think the days and the months ahead for all of us are going to be very, very interesting. What else can I say? The Chinese have a proverb saying, "May you live in interesting times." We are, I think. Thank you very much for all of your emails to The Unexplained. I'm not going to do any shout-outs on this edition. I've just had so many things to do. I'm sorry this show is late. I've had a couple of issues to deal with myself, a health situation that I won't go into here, but it just kind of has delayed a lot of things that I've been doing. I promise you I am seeing your emails, and where necessary, I'm responding directly. And of course, I'll do a big mega shout-out probably on the next edition of The Unexplained. Now, it's interesting, there's that word again, it's worthy of note, perhaps, that the person I had booked to do an edition of The Unexplained this morning, and it had skipped my mind that we'd be getting the US presidential election result as I was doing the recording, just didn't think of it. I don't know, when I'm writing diary entries, sometimes I just don't think. The person we're going to be talking with is Ollie Damagard from LightOnConspiracies.com. Now, this man has spent a big portion of his life investigating things like assassinations and, as the title of the website suggests, conspiracies. His most important work to date has been about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olaf Palme, which we talked with him about last time. I have a feeling that he might have some comments about the way the world stands at the moment when we speak with him in a moment. He's based in southern Spain, so we're going to connect with him digitally in just a few seconds from now. Ollie Damagard, the guest on this edition of The Unexplained. If you want to get in touch with me, go to the website, theunexplained.tv, designed by Adam Cornwell from Creative Hotspot, and you can send me an email there. And if you can, as we come to the end of this year, leave a donation for the show to allow the work to continue. All right, let's get to southern Spain now. After a long night, we enter a whole new day and a whole new dawn. Let's speak with Ollie Damagard. Ollie, really good to have you back on the show. And as I mentioned to my listener, we're recording this just an hour after Donald J. Trump made his speech accepting the people's decision to make him president of the U.S. I had a feeling that you might have a view on this. And just before we get into other matters, I'd just be interested to explore what that might be.
Well, in my humble opinion, the last real elected president in the U.S. was JFK, who was very brutally killed on November 22nd, 1963. And that very powerful and death machine, I would call it, the military-industrial complex with all the backing from different areas that took over that day, have been in charge ever since. And it's every new president have just been a new fancy cover that have made us believe in democracy. And I totally don't believe a lot of these things. And the theater play that is being called the elections is something that has not really interested me for many years. This election, though, is, or selection, is different, because I believe Trump is sort of like a wild card due to his enormous wealth and so on. So I don't know. I have really not followed this because I'm not interested in politics at all. I'm interested in trying to expose the crimes on a very high level that is going on and is trying to push us into a very dark future. So, but this is part of it. And Hillary, I've been following for years and years because she is a career criminal together with her husband, Bill.
We have to say for our American listeners, some of whom may well have voted for Hillary, that is your view. But it is a view, as I followed this, that I've heard a lot of American commentators claiming, the likes of Alex Jones, people like that.
I know
it's going to sound very far-fetched to a lot of people listening. And of course, when you say things like this, aren't you setting yourself up to at least be criticized and at most be sued?
I've been saying this for the last, I don't know how many years, and I haven't been sued yet, criticized. Very few people. Once you start looking into the evidence of these things, then it's not really a discussion if you look at the evidence. But I'm open to any criticism, of course.
Okay, now I know we weren't going to talk about these matters, but it's just such a momentous morning here. And the only thing I would say, and just to close out this discussion of the presidential election, that, you know, a lot of people were saying that the machine politician was Hillary and the way to get rid of the machine would be to elect Donald Trump, if you follow that line of thought. And now that has happened against all the predictions, against all the polls and all the rest of it. Doesn't that prove that the dark hand of conspiracy really is overstated or doesn't exist?
I did not understand that question.
Let me explain. Doesn't it mean that all of those people who said, you know, Hillary, machine politician, it's all very dark. Donald Trump is the man who represented himself as being the representative of the people. He's won.
Like I say, I haven't followed this election, and I don't know about Trump. I don't know. So it's going to be very interesting to see, because he's got some very wild ideas and very dramatic changes he wants to do. So I have no idea. But when you look at this election, it's been feeling like which one out of two mad options would you like to choose, my humble opinion?
A lot of people have been saying that. I don't have a view because I don't know enough. But that's the kind of stuff I've been reading. All right, let's get on to what we were going to talk about. And let's start with, you're going to be part of a panel, aren't you? A very important panel on the issue of JFK. And we're coming up to the anniversary, of course, of his assassination, which is now going to be 53 years ago. In November this month, we're recording in. You are actually going to be on a panel with the girlfriend of Lee Harvey Oswald. Is that right?
Judith Mary Baker is her name. She was the mistress of Lee Harvey Oswald and also one of the most bright minds in the early 60s when it came to cancer research. So she was recruited by the CIA to be part of creating a bioweapon against Fidel Castro. And this is where she got involved with Lee Harvey Oswald, who she fell madly in love with, and now, after many, many years, he's been standing up and really trying to clean his name in the history, to really expose his part of this murder. And she is the one who is the brain behind this conference. It's now the fourth year, and I've been invited as one of the speakers there. We're going to be 30 speakers, absolutely incredible people, I must say, from all areas around this assassination. So it's a great honor for me to be part of it.
And what will you be adding to it? I mean, I don't want you to give away completely all of your presentation, but just give me a flavor of what you think that you will add to it.
No, what Judith has asked me is to connect this historical event so many years ago, but connected with up to what is going on in the world today, with so many false flag operations and state-sponsored terrorism that is going on. So this is what I will try to connect and just show like a red thread.
Okay, and that is one thing that you have been saying consistently as you've been doing your research and doing interviews with people like me, that JFK is merely the start of a chain of events that include things like the assassination of John Lennon, if I'm right, the assassination of Olof Palme, the president of the prime minister, rather, of Sweden. All of these things have a connection.
The connection is a ultra-secret hit team called Operation 40 that was created in the early 60s. It was under the supervision of President Dwight Eisenhower, where elements in the CIA and top people in the military-industrial complex came together and came up with the idea, why don't we create a sort of a death tool that can be used anywhere in the world where we have problems with people in the government or people in businesses or whatever who's standing in our way. Let's create this ultra-secret hit team that can be just flown in, take care of business, and open the way for whatever it is we want. So the task was given to Vice President Richard Nixon to create this team. So he connected with people from the CIA. It was David Attlee Phillips, Ted Shackley, and E. Howard Hunt. These are very, very important elements in a COVID operation in the Western Hemisphere for decades to follow.
And of course, we know the name of E. Howard Hunt because of Watergate.
Yeah, he was one of them. And he was there to try and cover up the tracks of some of the deeds of Operation 40, among other stuff. That was why they did this whole thing. But people, these CIA Grey Wolves type of people, went to Miami, or they were already stationed there, and started recruiting mostly exiled Cubans that had just left Cuba, with the intention of to start with gather a hit team that could take out Fidel Castro, which was the big threat at that point. So there was about 80 members to start with, where some of them were being trained in everything from blackmail to extortion to whatever, financial hitmen and so on. But there was also about 20 of them who were specially trained in murder, all kinds of assassinations. And they were trained in Louisiana, north of Lake Pontchartrain. They were trained in Miami, down in the Everglades, and in Guatemala, where they were trained in jungle warfare and so on. And then this team, they did several attempts to take out Fidel Castro, but then after the missile crisis, when suddenly JFK, I think when he sat there with a finger on the button, almost being the one that created or started the Third World War, I think that was a point where he just realized the level of extreme madness that was going on and refused to be part of it. And you will see from that point on, his actions suddenly becomes very, very powerful. And a stand-up for humanity, where he wanted to destroy the CIA, he wanted to get out of the grip of the Federal Reserve Bank, he wanted to get out of Vietnam, he wanted to do major changes in many, many different areas, including starting a witch hunt on the mafia. And that was the thing that where the decision was made to take him out. So Operation 40, when you look at all the thing that happened in Dealey Plaza, was a massive ambush with multiple shooters, multiple hit teams with spotters, multiple escaped cars and so on. And many of the people there, in my opinion, after 30 years, were members of Operation 40. Then the same members or people from the same team were present when Robert Kennedy was taken out, Martin Luther King, when the overtake in Chile, Santiago, when President Allende was assassinated with the backup of CIA, same players that they used down there, 9/11, 1973. They killed Robert Smith in South Africa. They killed Olof Palme. There were members of this team in Stockholm in 86 when Olof Palme was killed, and so on. And it's been going on. Some of these guys are still around. They're really old, but still active. And over the years, this Operation 40 has, of course, changed face many, many times. And in any operation they're in, they keep changing the name of the team and so on. But these, they're like veterans and have been part of educating new people in the skill, in the what do you call it, in the art of assassination, if you want to call it that. So I would say they've been very, very crucial. Also in the assassination of John Lennon, the shooter there was not the official story, but one of the highest officer in Operation 40 as well. His name was Jose Perdomo. He was the doorman the day that Lennon was shot. So they've been very, very essential. And this is one group I also aim at exposing at this conference. And I just want to mention one key player that has not been mentioned until now is that the paymaster for this group was a very young George Herbert Walker Bush, CIA operative, and he was the one that had the task of funneling the funds into this group. And when you look at his career, this group has been very, very central and followed him all the way, helping him to deal with all kinds of problems.
You are saying that these people were implicated in the assassinations of a lot of people who were in different historical eras. They were very different kinds of people. I don't quite understand how you can draw a connection between this group and all of those disparate people who, you know, would not have had contact on a regular basis, at least, with each other. I mean, how John Lennon, Ole Palmer, how would these people be connected?
The people are not connected, but the power structure behind these assassinations, the power structure behind this so-called New World Order, is the one that I've been using. It's a skilled team of assassins that have been used whenever needed. And the man I mentioned before, my friend Chip Tatum, who is a CIA whistleblower, he was a deep cover agent for 25 years. He was one of the Night Stalker pilots, you know, the black helicopters. Mm-hmm. He was one of the pilots in the Iran-Contra scandal. And also he was the commander of Pegasus, an ultra-hit secret hit team under the direct control of George Bush Sr. for all the way up. He's been working directly under all the presidents from Richard Nixon up to George Bush Sr. until 92. When he refused to commit an assassination. Bush Sr. wanted him to take out Ross Perot, if you remember. That was the time where he stood up. And he is also one that totally backs all the things I say. He knows quite a few of the people involved in this team. And he says when you look at the world of assassins globally, it's a very, very small little group that are just being used again and again and again, because not many people can do these type of things. And they're just, since they're very skilled and they can trust them, they keep using the same team.
We talked about the Ole Palmer case the last time we spoke, and I think we touched on John Lennon. What threat to the elite behind the elite would those people have been?
It's a very good question, and if you see, one of the things that is the red thread between many of these victims is that they are people standing up for the beautiful things in life. They're standing up against wars, they're standing up for peace and unity, and when you look at the powers behind so much destruction in the world, their agenda is war, death, all the horrors in the world, where they make billions and get total control. So people like John Lennon, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Lady Di, are people that were standing up for these type of thing, and thereby became a threat, because they were one of the things that were the most dangerous about them was that they were so extremely popular that millions would listen whatever they said and would also maybe do. So, and John Lennon, the reason I cannot say for sure, but he had been out of the spotlight for many years, and now he was just about to release his comeback album together with Yoko Ono. They were planning a global peace tour starting in in the US and so on. So if that was why he was taken out, I do not know. I just know that the shooter this evening was a man called Jose Perdomo. He was a doorman that worked extra this evening, And when you see when when John Lennon and Yoko Ono came, they just came from the studio. Mark Chapman, the alleged shooter, was standing to the right when the limo arrived, near the limo. They exited the vehicle, started walking into the building, the Dakota building. Yoko Ono was like 5-6 meters ahead. And then when John Lennon was in the middle of the entrance, sort of, a series of shots were fired and he went down. Yoko Ono came out, they took him to hospital where he was declared dead. But all of the shots that hit him came straight from the left and at very close range. And at no point were Mark Chapman anywhere near that position. So who was there?
Well, if that's the case, why, you know, Mark Chapman is still in jail for this, and it's 36 years ago this Christmas. Yeah. Why hasn't he said it wasn't me?
When it comes to certain of these assassinations, you have what is called mind-controlled people involved, people that have been under what is called MK-Ultra control, where they are being mentally controlled in these operations. Very, very rarely do they use these mind-controlled people as the assassins themselves. Most of the time, they're just there to take the fall. And one of the things is they don't remember anything afterwards. They're just standing there waiting to be picked up. It's the same with Sirhan Sirhan. These two are very famous people when it comes to this type of thing.
That's the Robert Kennedy assassin.
Exactly. And he, as well, he can't remember anything. And when
but both of those people, sorry to interrupt, when they get into prison, when they get into the system, will have had extensive psychological checks. If their brains had been tampered with, surely to goodness, that would have come to light.
But we're talking about the forces that have put them behind prison, wants them there. By no way they want them out, no way they want them to be able to be released and so on. They want them in there. So these are the forces that will not give you the real truth either.
And just remind me, what happened to the doorman from the Dakota building?
Sorry, what happened to him?
Yeah.
He disappeared right away.
Okay.
He was just...
You don't know where he is now?
I don't think he's alive now. According to Frank Sturgis, who was one of the people at the Watergate burglary, and also who was one of the in one of the shooters in Dealey Plaza, he later said that José Perdomo died after that. But he claimed that José Perdomo had died in 74 already, and this was in 1980. So sometimes in these team of assassins also, they have multiple identities, multiple, just like in you know, bad films like the, what do you call it, the what's it called, with the Bourne Identity, these type of movies, where multiple identities, multiple passport, multiple, all of these things. And sometimes also the best thing is if the real identity, their real identity, is dead, and then a so-called dead person cannot commit these crimes, which is a perfect cover for such a hitman.
And dead men tell no tales, as they say. Interesting, though, isn't it? If this did happen to John Lennon in the way that you say it did, why the decision wasn't taken to tackle him in, like, 1969, when he was in a bed in the Hilton, wasn't it, Amsterdam, with Yoko Ono calling for peace around the world and getting the attention of the media everywhere, even in an era without internet? If there was ever a time to deal with somebody who was destabilizing the way somebody wanted it to be, that would have been the time, wouldn't it?
It would, but at the same time, you know, assassinations is a messy thing. It is a tricky thing to cover up. And so what they try to do is destroy your reputation, intimidate you, scare you, these type of things first. And John Lennon was hated by J. Edgar Hoover, for one of the people who really, really hated him. And I'm sure that this has been discussed in 69 as well. But at that point, if something had happened to him, it could have started a revolution. It could have started anything like that. So I'm not the one who did it. So I can only say they didn't do it in 69. They did it in 1980. Why? I'm not sure. But one of the reasons, I believe, is that they saw him as a major threat with this comeback.
Tell me about the process of research that you do, Hade. I mean, you go to the places involved. Do you, there'll be many books written about these things. A lot of people have their say online. Do you trace all of these people and talk to them in the first person?
I try to do that. I try also to go on location, especially with all of these so-called alleged terror attacks that have been here, occurred the last 4 or 5 years. I've been to most of the places. I try to go there with an undercover cameraman, and then we film on location and then compare it with the official story. And very, very often it is not difficult to debunk the official story. You will see it makes absolutely no sense. And once you start really going into deep research of what happened, when you start tracking down alleged victims, when you start tracking down alleged assassins, terrorists, and so on, you will see that it doesn't match up at all. Often the cemetery where people are said, the victims are said to have been buried, there are no graves. You will go to the schools where the assassins or the terrorists are said to have been. There's no record of them. There are no birth certificate, no death certificate, no nothing. Many of these things are staged terror events, just to inside jobs, I would totally claim, to scare us into, to keep us in a constant state of fear, so that we will accept more and more militarized police surveillance, and so on. It's going under the term of the strategy of tension. It's a CIA operation that has been ongoing since the early 50s. There's another one called Operation Chaos as well, that is just there to destabilize modern society, so that we will be in a constant state of fear and accepting more and more of their agenda.
The power players in world affairs for as long as I've been on this earth have been Russia and the United States. Where do the Russians figure, if at all, in any of this?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's Russia is something I have not focused on. And what I do, as far as I've been able to find out, that we have been fooled in many areas. We have been manipulated with and pumped with information that has not been true. And I believe that the state of the Cold War, that was not the way it was. It seems like this threat from the East has been totally exaggerated for us to once again live in fear and accept more and more of these things. I don't know. I'm not interested in politics. The areas that I focus on are assassinations and false flag operations. This is the area where I feel that that you need to focus somewhere to be able to make a contribution in exposing things. Otherwise, these areas are just so big. And the operations that I've been looking into, Russia, the Russian element has more or less never been there. It's Mossad, CIA, MI6, these type of organizations, yes, but from the eastern part, not a lot.
And how are these official organizations like the Mossad and MI6, CIA, how are they galvanized? How are they deployed to be part of this alternative agenda?
It is, according to people on the inside, Chip Tatum, but also other researchers like David Icke and so on, where I must say that I agree with them that on a lower level, on a street level, there's no connections with the CIA, Mossad, MI6 at all. But then the higher up you come in the power pyramid, in the global pyramid, the global structure behind the scenes, these operations join at the top. And when I speak to Chip and so on, he speaks very freely about them working with each other. And so depending on whatever is needed, whatever country it is they're doing an operation in or attacking or whatever, they will use whatever sources that are the best, so that if something is carried out in France, for instance, it will be very little French involvement, even though they're totally in it, but they will use like Mossad, CIA, and so on, operatives that cannot be tracked on a local basis. And then if it's in England, okay, in with some French there, but not the English, and so on. And but you will see that especially the CIA Mossad elements in recent years in these so-called terror attacks in Europe have been very, very, very strong.
Now, Ollie, I've edited out what was quite a long interruption in this conversation because mysteriously the line dropped and I wasn't able to re-establish contact with you. And my first thought was, well, I better check my internet connection and all the rest of it, and maybe you ought to check yours. But you were telling me during the break we had in recording, this happens to you quite a lot.
I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews, and I cannot say how many times it's happened. And it's just when I start to mention names, or if we go into some sensitive topic, boom, it disconnects. Then we reconnect, we start the interview again. Mm. I get to the exact same point, I start naming the same name, and it cuts again. And then you can't call back, it sort of blocks, so you cannot get back. So you need to wait like an hour or so. And it's like in my world, I don't care, you know, if it's being sabotaged, whoever is sabotaging, they're the people who need to know about these things the most, because they're the ones protecting it. So it's just a matter of accepting the game. If it's just the internet cutting up, fine. If somebody's sabotaging, fine. Whatever, as long as we in the end get it out there.
So. Well, you're a very determined guy, because I have to say that, you know, I am a journalist, and there are some topics I have to admit that I won't go into on this show, because, you know, I'm concerned about going into those topics. Not only am I concerned that there may not be enough fact around what a person is claiming, but also I'm concerned that, you know, certain topics are not exactly safe. So you're in a very difficult territory. It's not a territory that I would like to be in.
It is a minefield. It is a dangerous area, and many, many people who have gone into it are no longer with us. So it's a tricky one. I've received death threats as well. I've got a family, and so it is a spooky area. It really, it is like in a minefield, and you never know if you stepped on a mine until it's too late. So it's what can I say? So far, so good. Mm-hmm. I just know that these things needs to get out there for the best of all of us. And I can't see a lot of people doing it, so I need to do my part. And I'm just devoted to find the truth wherever it leads me. And because the thing with the truth, I'm absolutely in love with the truth, because it is so simple. It fears no investigation and it stands on its own. It's just a matter of finding it. But when you look at conspiracies, where there's a criminal thought behind actions, and where something has been carried out that is not true, but if we are being told a different story, that will be totally infected with lies and cover-ups, and people from the inside starts fearing each other, they start killing off each other, and there's a lot of, it's just, this is the wonderful thing with the truth. It's so simple. It's just a matter of finding it, which can be very hard at times.
The problem that would probably put me off, but then I'm a very different individual from you, investigating these things, is at the end of the day, you're never going to be able to comprehensively prove anything. You know, anything that you put out there is going to be naysayed, alternative evidence will be put up, and some people will say, well, this guy's just looking to sell books, he's just looking to get his name out there, everybody wants their 15 minutes of fame, and that would certainly be applied by some of these people to you, I'm sure it has been already.
I tell you, if you want fame and fortune, this is not the way to go. More than 12 years writing my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion. It's sold like 200-300 copies. I mean, compare that to the thousands and thousands and thousands of hours I put into it. It's like nothing. I don't get paid for interviews. I don't get paid for conferences. I get paid. I fly all over the world, but I get the plane ticket paid for. I get accommodation. I get food and so on. And that's it. Maybe $100 in my pocket. So I come home totally worn out every time. So it's not like this is a glitter and glamour trip. And but I tell you, I've been, I'm not being attacked more or less by anyone. And normally I try to, in my in the talks I give and so on, I try to build the case so that it's not really after the whole show is done or whatever you want to call it, it's not really up for discussion or debate, because the proof presented is hopefully so strong that it will show a crystal clear case. But many of these cases take time to prove, so I'll be happy to go into any of these major topics, but then maybe we can do one show about one thing and then go through it step by step by step.
All right. You've looked into some of the recent terror attacks, and France has been subject to the most appalling mauling in the last year or so. It's a near neighbour to us here in the UK, and many of us have French connections and love the country, which I do. So it's been very disturbing, troubling and sad to watch the unfolding of events there. I know that you've researched the Nice attack, which was a particularly shocking attack, of course, in an area that so many of us know and associate with good times, peace and holidays. What do you think you found out about that?
To answer that question, first, it's very important to understand what a false flag operation is. It's an old naval term where in the old days, naval nations like England, Spain, Holland, and so on, was going around the world attacking different countries and occupying and so on. And many times to do that, just to go in and invade a country, would disturb trading agreements with neighboring countries and whatever. So somewhere down the line, somebody came up with the idea, why don't we put, instead of just attacking a country and then being the bully and the aggressor, if we instead put the enemy's flag on one of our own ships, then let that ship attack ourselves, then we are the victims. We are in the position where we can honorably defend ourselves, and we will even be seen as a hero after going in and attacking, invading, rape and plunder, whatever nation it is. So this is where the term comes from, false flag operation, that you put the false flag, attack yourself. So we're talking about a PSYOP where it's an inside job, where the one being attacked is actually the one who's the attacker. Mm.
But every time there's been an incident like 9/11 or any terrorist linked, connected incident that I've been aware of reporting news over these years, and that's all of them, there's always been somebody who's come up and said it's a false flag operation, but they've never really been able to stand it up, Ollie.
I totally disagree with you about not being able to stand up against it or prove the case. If you, I totally agree. Every single time since 9/11, people have cried out false flag. And it's very, very important not to do that until you can really prove your case. But according to Judge Napolitano, you got David Steele from the CIA, who's also come forward as CIA whistleblower, and people from the FBI who's also stepped forward as whistleblower. All of them agree that all the attacks on American soil since 9/11 have been false flag operations. It's just gone totally viral and absolutely absurd, the amount of so-called false flag. So I'm very aware of using this word because it's come to a point where it's got a very negative sound to it. At the same time, when you look at these operations, you have to go wherever the evidence leads you. And time on time and time again, it gets back to this exact same pattern being played out.
All right, we were talking about the Nice attack. Now, if any attack bore the hallmarks, and we don't know still precisely, but if any attack bore the hallmarks of a lone wolf deciding and deliberating doing something and then doing it, this, to those of us who are casual observers from the outside, bore those hallmarks. The idea that it might have been some kind of false flag. Well, you would think if it was a false flag engineered operation, they would do it in a cleverer way than that, wouldn't they? And let's remind people what happened there. This was where somebody drove a truck through innocent people just out for an evening enjoying themselves, yeah?
That's the official story. It was on the Bastille Day, July the 14th this year. It's the national day, the day when they celebrate the French Revolution and so on. So a very important day in France. And just like you say, they were celebrating it with a big fireworks in this beautiful city of Nice on the south coast of on the coast of the Mediterranean. Beautiful evening, and right after the fireworks, this guy apparently wanted to kill as many as possible, so he took a 19-ton Renault truck and just started driving straight into the crowd, killing 84 people and injuring somewhere between 202 and 303 others, depending on what reports you want to that you want to trust. Anyway, so horrific event, if what we're being told is true. It is said that the police stopped the truck right outside the Hyatt Regency Hotel, which is a big casino as well, where there was a shootout, and they killed the driver, and end of story. Absolute horror were being pumped out all over the media about this event. So I go there with an open mind, trying to see what actually happened.
When you said you went, that you actually went to the scene, you went to the place.
I have not been to Nice. This is one of the few places I have not been, but I went through internet, through filmed footage, all of the evidence that was available, and tried to see, does the official story match up? Does the timeline match up? Are there any things that are weird, inconsistencies, and so on? So one of the things is that Nice is the city in France with the most CCTV cameras. They've got 915 units all over the place, and they're very proud of it. This very evening when this happened, all CCTV footage stopped working. And the day after this whole thing, or the few days after this whole thing occurred, the local authorities demanded that all footage would be confiscated and destroyed. The woman in charge of this, she's been standing up and done lots of interviews saying, what is going on? What is going on? I'm just trying to show what actually happened, and it's not what we're being told. So she's been, they're trying to sue her and shut her up and so on. That's just one little thing. But the thing is, this is a 19-ton truck, big white truck, that is said to have killed all of these people. For one thing, a truck this size is not allowed in the city center of French cities like Nice. So, and it was observed for some 9 hours before this happened. Officially, the police approached the driver and said, you're not allowed to be here. And then the driver, I quote, said, I'm selling ice cream. So the police said, okay, and left. Okay, doesn't really sound very logical, but that is what they say.
Well, I mean, let's be fair about it. It's the kind of thing that can happen. It's what we call here in the UK the cock-up theory of history. Somebody simply makes a mistake. Somebody makes an assumption, and the assumption turns out to be wrong. I can't see... I mean, obviously, it was a turned out to be a really tragic mistake, but I can't see anything that would point towards this being skullduggery in that.
Howard, hear me out, and I'll just point out some things. Okay, so it said that the attack was filmed when the truck started accelerating. There was a man standing on a balcony filming it, and suddenly you see this truck come driving, and it starts accelerating, starts driving straight into the crowd. And then the final shootout is outside the one of the main casinos, the Hyatt Regency Casino. Okay, so the official story said this was 1.6 miles that it drove. It took some 30 minutes, which is a long time, to go that whole distance, killing people along the way. But when you look at the footage where it said that this is where the attack started, you will see that it's filmed on a balcony. It's black metal. And then down in the left-hand corner of the film footage, you will see that there's a lit-up W. Now, the only building that has this exact, it's part of the hotel, the name of the hotel, and that's the Westminster Hotel. You will also see right in front of the hotel on the footage, you will see that there are four palm trees that grows. They stand together in a very unusual way. So it's for sure it's outside the Westminster Hotel. That is where the attack starts. And then it said that almost 30 minutes later, it stopped outside the Hotel Regency, Hyatt Regency Hotel, outside the casino where the shootout was. Officially, that's 1.6 miles. But when you check it out on Google Map, it's 215 meters. We're talking, it's one block more or less that has been where all of this is said to have happened.
Then, so how do you think that discrepancy came about?
The discrepancy is that if you hear me out, and let's go back to this question, okay? So you have a white truck that is said to have hit or killed 84 people. It's also said that the driver shot some of them out through the side window on the right-hand side, but most of them were killed by this vehicle. If you have a road accident, if you hit a deer or an elk or moose or whatever, you will have dents in the car. You will have, there will be guts and blood from one animal. This, you can see that on any kind of accidents, this is what it will look like. This is a truck, 84 killed people and 202 at least wounded by this car. There is not one single drop of blood on the truck at all. Not one, zero, zero, zero. You look at the car, the tires, I mean, some of the people who were killed must have gone under the truck, must have been, you know, had the vehicle pass over them. But if you look at the tires on the truck that is being towed away, and also there are absolutely no tire tracks after the truck on the little footage that is there of the victims and so on. No blood, no nothing. You got also all of the photos of the victims are within this very short distance, not the 1.6 miles we're being told, but within 215 meters. Then the damage to the truck, I mean, it's said to have knocked down light bulbs, it's said to have knocked down people and so on. You would have dents or things like that in the metal. But here, the only thing that is with this truck is that they've taken off the hood. There's no blood, no body tissue, no cloth, no nothing on it. And you have the shootout with the police. It said you got filmed from two different directions. You can't see the truck move at all. It's standing still when this whole shootout thing is going on. The footage that is taken from the side of the casino, if you look above it and to the right of the truck when this whole thing is going on, you will see fireworks. But the fireworks officially in Nice that evening was totally in a different direction, to the left, way, way, way to the left of the truck. So this footage, when the shootout is filmed, was later in the evening, some 20 minutes later, when the fireworks was in the next city down the coast, which was out, the fireworks were out at sea and from outside. You will also see there's absolutely no footage of the driver at all. There's no crime scene photo of anything of the victim. And instead, he appears in Tunisia the very same day or the day after, very, very confused, saying, I have no idea why I've been accused of this. I have no idea why they're using my identity. Very confused and so on. You got this is the thing, like I said before, when you go to the crime scene, it's very hard often to find the real victims. Where are the graves? Where are the families? Where are all of these things? It's only we're being pumped in media with all of these photos and names of victims. But when you really try and track them down, most of the time you will find that the so-called paper trail is very, very short. They're on Facebook like 6 months before, and there's a few here and there, Twitter things, and then they're not there. But if you and I, there are ways of retrieving a lot of the information on internet nowadays, if you want to. I mean, you will get like stacks and stacks and documents from everything from insurance companies to whatever different kind of surveys and death, all kind of certificates and with the government and so on. You will got lots and lots of information. But these people, when you try and track them down, it's like doop, 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 gone. Doop, 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 gone. And for instance, two of the, we were talking about Bataclan before, there was one woman that afterwards, a female suicide bomber, it said there's footage of her blowing herself up in Belgium after some days after this whole thing, or at least you hear them scream and there's a fight going on inside an apartment, and boom, it said that she blows herself up. I've got a film interview with her in Morocco. She's like, I have no idea why they're using my identity. I'm here. I have nothing to do with it. You can find these things on YouTube. There's also two of the so-called victims in the Bataclan, two Spanish guys, where their families was approached. Since I live in Spain, I know this. Their family were approached by the Spanish government saying, we're very, very sorry your sons were killed in this attack. So the families were in absolute shock and sorrow when a few hours later their sons called home and said, hi, mom, how are you doing? And it's very, very bizarre, to say the least, when you get into these areas, because why are they using fake identities in these operations, or real identities and not from dead people? It's very confusing.
Okay, is it okay if I come in here? Because, you know, if I was a terrorist wanting to do something, but I didn't want repercussions for my family and perhaps my associates who hadn't yet carried out their terrorist attacks, then I would assume somebody else's identity. I think that's pretty clear, isn't it?
Yeah, but here we're talking about people that are being claimed to be dead in media. It's through media. It's not the terrorists saying anything. These are claimed victims.
Okay. I made a few notes when you were talking, and you tell me when it's a good point to come in and talk about those notes. I'll be led by you, okay?
No, please, go for it, Howard.
Some of the videos that you talk about, I think they're the videos that I, too, have seen. Many of us in the media have, but then they were put out there for the public to see, too. If you look for them, they're there. The videos that I saw didn't appear to be particularly high definition, but you're telling me that you can see all sorts of detail, like the absence of blood and that sort of thing, and the state of the tires. I'm not actually sure whether the definition of the videos that you will have been looking at, and I've seen too, would have shown you those things.
No, but this is the thing. When all of these alleged attacks happen, there's video footage, but the video footage is awful quality. It looks like a bad VHS cassette from the 1970s, you know, this type of quality. The thing I'm talking about when it comes to the evidence around the truck and so on, that's high definition photos from after the accident or this incident, you know, when the truck is being towed away, or all of these photos that is high quality photos.
And some of those photos appeared in our newspapers here. Have you not thought that perhaps the really shocking material that might have been caught by photographers has just simply not been released to protect people's sensibilities, and of course to guard and safeguard the families who would be deeply upset by that? Or you think something else is at play?
No, of course. I mean, I can totally respect if that is done, but please explain to me, how can there not be one single blood or dent or anything on this truck after having hit 286 people? Please explain that to me.
I mean, I can't. I'm sure there will be somebody who could, and I would, if anybody else has got a take on this, perhaps you were there. If you want to email me and I can put your points back to Ollie, by all means. I mean, I can't explain those things. I mean, yes, I did wonder about why the video footage that we saw was in such bad definition and quality, when you know that a cyclist can be knocked off his bike in London and the quality that you will get is full HD if that person is wearing a head cam. So, yeah, I fully take your point.
If you have to see the pattern, you know, if this was only one incident, fine. But if it's repeated again and again and again, the footage of victims in the street and everything. I mean, nowadays, I don't think you can get a cell phone or a mobile phone that does not film in HD or very good quality. But these are always really, really, really bad. It's the same with photos of claimed terrorists and so on. They're blurry images. You can't really get any details. Often the background is really blurry, so you can't be absolutely sure where the footage was taken. But then when the police moves in afterwards, all of these things, and you see the victims, and so these are super clear images. So What is it that makes the difference? What is it that shuts down the CCTV footage every single time? And the company who is more or less always in charge, it is the one that is has been responsible for the CCTV the footage at the most train stations, the subway stations, airports, and so on in Europe and other places. And it's the same again and again. Just when it is when it's really needed, boom, it shuts down. And then it comes up again. Also the same with the police communication system, the internal communication between police units and so on, boom, get shut down just a minute before it happens. Then as soon as the incident is over, boom, it goes back into action. So what is that? Who has the power to shut these systems down, and why is it done?
Well, I suppose, listen, I can't answer that question either. But then I'm not here to answer everything. The point that I would make, and it is worth making, is why would, if there is some agenda, some power behind the government wanting to bring us all into global servitude, which is a very commonly expressed agenda, and I fully understand it and think there might be some credibility in some of it, but haven't yet seen the smoking gun shining star evidence to absolutely prove it. I mean, if this exists, would I attack innocent people in a place like Nice, just minding their own business? Would I not find a more grand slam way to attack a government or a nuclear power station or something like that? Why would I use this method if I was indulging in false flag? I don't get that.
It is called the strategy of tension. It was an operation that started in the around 1954, where the intention is to inflict fear in modern society, to make people sort of live in a state of constant fear from whatever attack from anywhere, so that we, the normal person, will more and more accept their solution of a militarized police, more and more surveillance, more and more CCTV cameras, more giving up our civil rights, our human rights, our liberties, and so on, for our own, what is called, our own protection. This is the thing. This is also where the whole Gladio network is being used to carry out these attacks. So what they do is they very deliberately attack places that will affect emotionally the population, not the government. The governments are not attacked in these ways, not at all. It's normal people, totally innocent people. That's their whole idea. And this is also where another operation called Operation Chaos comes in, where it's what total random violence. That's the whole idea, that anyone at any time can be hurt. This is to create this fear mode.
Is this something that you think is going to be ongoing then? We're going to see more of this through 2017 and beyond. It sounds like it's a continuing campaign.
It's been going on for decades and just escalated. 2016 has been absolutely ridiculous almost when you look at the amount of these type of operations. But at the same time, Chip Tatum, I mentioned before, he was involved in some false flags during his career in the CIA, and he says that the timeline that is connecting these events are very, very tight, and many of the following operations is based on the success of earlier false flags. So anytime we can expose and mess it up for them, this can cause serious delays in their planning for months and months. So this is why I'm totally devoting myself to expose these things as fast as possible to mess it up for them. And I was even able to predict the Copenhagen shooting on internet and several international radio stations 1 month before it happened, to the hour, to the exact location of where it was going.
How did you do that?
It was from inside sources. I can go into great detail if you want. But the thing is, once you start seeing how they operate, they're keeping to the same theme. It's the same. We see repeated again and again. So there's not much variation. And also the timeline of when these things are needed to be carried out and so on. Mm. So once you start seeing and understand the template that they're using, then you can start also predict it. And this is what I'm trying to do.
Isn't some of this, though, a little bit like exploring Mars? You know, there are people who say that they can see, I mean, the most recent one at the weekend was somebody who said that they saw a woman wearing a ball gown or a frock lying on the surface of Mars. I mean, I don't want to trivialize this at all, and it kind of sounds like I am, but I'm not. You know, if you look for a pattern, you'll find one.
Theories I'm totally not interested in. Conspiracy theories doesn't interest me at all. I'm trying to find the facts behind what is going on. This is also why when these operations, when it happens, I try to go on location as soon as possible while the police is still there, while the whole operation is still live, and then expose it as soon as possible. And I made hundreds of interviews you can find on YouTube and so on, whatever any of these attacks, so-called attacks, I've done many, like 2.5 hour interviews where we go step by step by step by step. So anyone that thinks that, and I can understand if this sounds a little bit crazy if you're not aware of this part of what's going on, but without name dropping, but Alfred Lavermont Weber, who was one of the judges at the War Tribune in Kuala Lumpur, where they judged Tony Blair, George Bush Sr., Dick Cheney for crimes against humanity. He's totally backing me. Chip Tatum, the whistleblower, he's totally backing me. Jim Mars, the author of The Crossfire, that was one of the books that was where the JFK movie was filmed. He's totally backing me. Professor Bob Howard, who was one of the experts in the war games in Pentagon, he's totally backing me. Alan Salarian, a former head consultant for the FBI, he's totally backing me. Jim Fetzer, a PhD, former Marine and so on, he's also backing me. There are many people that are backing and really helping me expose these things. So it's not just taken out of thin air.
For you, though, what's the end game? What are you going to get out of this at the end of the day? Because every time you investigate something, there'll be something else to investigate. And every time you do an investigation, people like me will put difficult questions to you, and others will simply dismiss you out of hand as being just another conspiracy theorist. It's a very hard road that you're on, isn't it?
I don't have an agenda. It's like the end game for me is that we have retake our beautiful world and are being left alone by this small group. If you look at the people behind the New World Order, they're very few. They're in the thousands. We are in the billions. I just want our world back, you know, and that they leave us alone, that they let us get on with life the way it's supposed to be.
All right. Assuming for a moment that everything that you said is correct, and, you know, we don't know that, but let's just make that assumption. What would we do as a population, as people listening to this, what can they possibly do to stop this? It's so powerful and clandestine. How could you stop it, if it exists?
Not an easy question to answer. I'm just a one-man band doing anything I can. So my sweetheart, Kim Kamala Aikman, she has put together a book. It's called Exactly What You're Asking Me. So What Can I Do? That's the title of it. So What Can I Do? In it, she's put together 14 questions that she asked 8 major researchers on a global scale. The same questions, and it's following exactly what you are saying. Is this true? Is GMOs, chemtrails, vaccines, the banking, is there such a thing as the New World Order? But also, what can you do to strengthen your inner spiritual power and so on to cope with these things, and what to do? And she's asked people like David Icke, Dr. Kevin Barrett, Sophia Smallstorm, Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot, Cynthia McKinney, I don't know if you know her, she's an incredible former member of the American Congress, who is the one who totally nailed Rumsfeld to the wall, and other researchers, Sam Gardner, myself, Ken O'Keefe, and so on, where the answers are very, very different from these 8 different individuals. But the end result of it all is to regain this world the way it's supposed to be, Because really, when you look at it from a bit of a higher perspective, it's almost like one mad serial killer can keep a whole massive city in terror. One individual, just by creating mayhem around him, can create such fear and control a whole population. And they do it the same. It really is like the Wizard of Oz, you know, like trying to control us through fear, because it's only through fear that they can do this whole thing. So I always try to empower people, to help them find balance inside, not buy into this whole thing. Because you always have to ask yourself, when these things happen, who benefits from me believing it? Who benefits from me becoming terrified? Who benefits from me just becoming like a total in reaction, instead of taking a step back, take a deep breath, wait a second, take a walk, and then come back, start looking at what actually happened, instead of just this thing that is being thrown at you.
Boy, Ollie, I think that's going to be where we have to leave it for this time. We will talk again. All I can do for you is to say, you know, please stay safe out there when you do these investigations, and you know, let me know what you're working on in the future, and we'll try and get you on again fairly soon. What's your website, Ollie?
My website is lightonconspiracies.com, because that is exactly what I'm trying to do. Absolute fearless, aiming the spotlight into the darkest of the darkest corner, into the belly of the beast, and in a non-violent, compassionate way, let the truth itself, the exposure of the truth, heal it, help to heal these very dark and inflamed areas.
Okay, thank you very much, Ollie. Please take care.
You too.
Well, very controversial. I know you will have views on what you've just heard, and if you would like to make those views known to me, you know how to do it. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv, and tell me what you think. I have to say here, very clearly, that the views you've just heard expressed are the views of Ollie Damagard and his website and his research. They are not the views of myself, The Unexplained, Adam, my webmaster, or anybody else connected with anything that I do here. You know, Ollie Damagard has a right to express his thoughts, and we have a right to counter them if we need to, and to ask for further elucidation, I think is the word. Interesting and very chilling stuff, and, you know, the jury has to remain out about it. But lightonconspiracies.com is Ollie's website. And thank you very much for listening to this show. If you have any thoughts, like I say, please do get in touch. Thank you very much for being part of this. More guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained. So until next we meet here online, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained. I'm in London, and please stay safe. Please stay calm. And please, in this world, stay in touch. Thanks. Bye-bye.